WEOL.
All kinds of sunshine, and what I say is a perfect Tuesday afternoon.
It's a nice one.
See what I did there with that music?
Oh, I do. Yeah, that was well done. It took me a while to catch it.
Well, it's nice out there, though. This is actually nice and tolerable. See, what I love about the fall, now that we're halfway through September, you know, I think we're finally getting rid of those 90 degrees and those 116,000% humidity days.
Yeah.
And we're getting to a little more comfortable temperatures.
Well, it's 82 right now. I mean, that's still pretty warm. Tomorrow's supposed to be nice, though. That more like a fall day, 70.
I like that, man. Yeah. 70, that's right
It'll
up
be
my
good.
Alley. I'm okay with that.
It warms up again, I think, for the weekend. But that's all right.
Fair enough.
Got to close down the pool one of these days.
70 degrees. Sounds like a nice atmosphere for you to head on out to the Baseball Heritage Museum. And they've got a lot of great things going on. One of the more fascinating presentations they have coming up will be discussing the 1948 Indians. Historian Morris Eckhaus is going to be giving that presentation. And he's kind enough to join us right now on the hotline. Morris, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
I'm great. Hi, Andy. Thank you for having me on.
Well, as we mentioned, you'll be giving a presentation at the Baseball Heritage Museum here in a couple of weeks on the 1948 Cleveland Indians. Now, you've mentioned in the past that they were considered one of baseball's most exciting and colorful teams. In your mind, Morris, what made them so colorful and exciting?
Well, gosh, you're talking about a team that was in a hotly contested pennant race from start to finish. Took a playoff game against the Red Sox to get into the World Series. You had Bob Feller, the greatest pitcher of his generation. You had Bill Veeck, the owner, maybe the greatest showman in baseball history. And you're talking about a team that was in on the very early stages of breaking the color line in Major League Baseball, with Larry Doby coming in 1947, and then Satchel Paige, the great Negro Leagues pitcher, coming in 1948, a controversial signing at that time, but Paige was invaluable down the stretch, winning all but one of his decisions and helping Cleveland get into the World Series. So it was indeed a colorful and exciting team.
Boy, sure are. Sounds like there were a lot of ups and downs with this team. A very, very interesting team to follow. No question about that. And as we all know, that was the last Indians team to win a World Series. Hard to believe that it's been 70 years since. But let's talk about some of the ups and the downs. I mean, I think the ups, so to speak, are fairly obvious because, you know, they won a lot of games. And as you mentioned, they were pretty colorful. A lot of the interesting personalities around the team made them very fun to watch. What were some of the downs, though, for a team like this? Because I feel like the downs on a World Series team a lot of times go unnoticed.
Oh, I think that's true. And the downs, the first down that comes to mind is that Feller, again, one of the greatest baseball pitchers of all time, did not get off to a real good start. He struggled really through the first half of the season. And it was thanks to pitchers like Bob Lemon and Gene Bearden, who may have been, when you talk about the ups, the biggest of the ups, because he kind of came out of nowhere to win 20 games with his knuckleball. He never had any season like that before or since. So the team got off to a kind of a slow start, and the team had some struggles going down the stretch. Cleveland was in a position to win without a playoff game on the last day of the regular season, with Bob Feller trying to win that game for Cleveland. He lost, and that forced the playoff game at Fenway Park that Bearden came on and won with the help of great support from Lou Boudreau, the Hall of Fame and most valuable player in that season, shortstop, and Ken Keltner over at third base.
Well, that's a lot of star power on that team. But that's just so interesting when you look back at that roster, just to see how much star power there was. I mean, recognizable names all these years later, 70 years later still, there are a lot of names on that roster, I think, that as Cleveland Indians fans, we immediately recognize. But see, Morris, I think what makes that team interesting, too, is that even if they hadn't played on the last World Series team in the history of the franchise, those are still names that even as casual baseball fans, most people recognize.
They are, but there's a certain bonus for winning it all. You can say the same thing, for instance, about the 1954 Indians, which the team that won at that time, the American League record, 111 wins. And there's not the same type of charisma, I think, with that team, in part because they did get swept in the World Series in four games by the New York Giants. Another thing about the 48 team is that there is so much about that team in terms of literature, books by and about Satchel Paige and Boudreaux and Vec and Feller. And, you know, they say about that team, you could walk down the street in Cleveland and never miss a play because all the windows were open and people were listening to the games on their radios with Jack Graney and Jimmy Dudley. And so we'll talk about that, how people can find out more about that team if they want to.
So that leads me into my next question here, Boris, because I thought it was very fascinating, you know, basically reading a small paragraph on what you plan to present on October the 6th from noon to 1 o'clock at the Baseball Heritage Museum. You talk about the voices of that particular season, Jack Graney, Tom Manning, and see, back then, you know, baseball on the radio, it still does hold true to this day, I think, but I'm a little bit biased in that. But back then, if you weren't at the game to see the game, you had to rely on everything that you heard back in the 40s on the radio to see just how well this team was doing. What can you tell us about the voices of the Tribe that season?
Well, they had two of the greatest. Jack Graney, who is up for the Frick Award this year, the highest honor that the National Baseball Hall of Fame pays to a broadcaster. Graney was the first player-turned-broadcaster. He had played for the Indians in a 1920 World Series. He played his entire Major League career in Cleveland. After his playing days, he went into broadcasting. And so he had that advantage that now is commonplace to have former players in the booth, but it was something new when he did it. And he knew the quirks of the ballparks and some of the other insider stuff that just made him outstanding. His partner, Jimmy Dudley, the play-by-play man, has already won the Frick Award, and he was just one of the all-time greats. I'm sure many people still remember the commercials for the aluminum siding outfit. Garfield won 2-3-2-3, but he was outstanding. And kind of the odd man out was Tom Manning, because Manning had been the original play-by-play voice of the Indians. But when the team changed radio stations, he was so entrenched at WTAM, the NBC affiliate, that he could not move over and call the games on the CBS affiliate. But Manning, in his own right, is one of the absolute baseball broadcasting pioneers.
Well, that's fascinating about Jack Graney, because you're right. Today, that's essentially commonplace. One of the first guys I think of would be Dan Gladden, a guy who pitched for many years for the Minnesota Twins and had a pretty solid career. And now he's not just doing the color, he's doing the play-by-play on the Twins radio network. But I did not know that about Jack Graney. He was one of the very first to stop playing and then begin broadcasting. Was he relatively young? I mean, how far removed was he from his playing days? You mentioned he played on the 1920 Indians World Series team, but how far removed was Jack Graney from his playing days?
Well, the 20 season, Jack was coming down the home stretch as a player, and I believe, don't quote me on this, but I believe his first year behind the microphone was 1932. I believe that was the year of the switch from WTAM to WHK. And, of course, by 1920, the radio broadcast of the games had not started yet. That started in 1921 with KDK in Pittsburgh. I believe Cleveland's first ever broadcast was 1927. So Graney was still a young man in his late 30s, early 40s, I'm going to say.
Okay, so he had kind of just been removed from his playing days when he was first hired, but for the 1948 World Series Indians team, he had been removed just a little bit. But that's fascinating that he was one of the first of his kind, no question about that.
He was the first. And he did broadcast. He finally called it quits in 1953. In fact, the very last game that he broadcast was the final game in 1953 when Al Rosen was trying to win the Triple Crown. He had the home run lead. He had the RBI lead. He was in a back-and-forth duel for the batting title with Mickey Vernon. And had he gotten a hit in his last at-bat, he would have won the batting title. He would have won the Triple Crown. He was out by an eyelash at first base, and that was that, and that was the end of Jack's broadcasting career.
Wow, very, very cool stuff. Again, we're talking with Morris Eckhaus, and again on Sunday, October the 6th, from noon to 1 p.m., or I'd take that back on Saturday, October
right.
the What's that?
That's correct.
Yeah, October
Saturday, October 6th. Yeah.
Saturday, October the 6th from noon to 1 p.m. He'll be giving a presentation on the 1948 Cleveland Indians. And, boy, just one last question for you on this team here in the presentation as well, because I'm just fascinated by all this information. But in the research that you did on this team, Morris, mm-hmm. what stood out the most about this team? Was there a stat that stood out the most? Was there a story that stood out above everything else? What was the most intriguing thing about that you found out about this team in your research?
There is a stat, but let me digress for a second. I started reading about the 1948 Indians probably when I was 9 or 10 years old. That's a long time ago. In a book called Amazing Baseball Teams. It was part of a series of baseball books for young readers. It's oddly, I could not find it in the Cleveland Public Library catalog. I've got to talk to them about that. But I was just entranced with the story and the legend, and of course I've learned more and more about that team over the years. I had the opportunity to meet Bob Feller and Larry Doby, but the statistic, that team led baseball in earned run average, batting average, and fielding average. And anybody that thinks that team kind of got lucky because, as I say, it was a tough pennant race. The playoff game was against Boston. The Red Sox had Ted Williams and all their great stars. That statistic proves out how good that team was.
Yeah, no question about that. To lead in all three of those categories, that's fantastic stuff. Well, Morris, we appreciate the time very much. This was a lot of fun, a lot of information to be provided on the 1948 Cleveland Indians. Again, Morris will be at the Baseball Heritage Museum October the 6th. Stop by and pay him a visit from noon to 1 p.m. Lots of interesting stuff there. Morris, thank you again for the time. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Andy. Great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you as well. Again, historian Morris Eckhaus joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Hey, if you're in the area, check that out at the Baseball Heritage Museum. He'll be talking about the 1948 Cleveland Indians. Lots of great stuff in there. Make sure you stop by. Visit baseballheritagemuseum.org and click on their events tab, and you can find out more about the event there. We need to take a break here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Matt Douglas and I will come back with more right after this here on AM 930 WE.
Hi, this is Jim Rosenhaus with your Indians update. The Tribe's final homestand of the season continues tonight as the White Sox come to town to open a three-game series, all games starting at 7:10. And here's your pitching matchups. A good one tonight. Corey Kluber going for the Tribe against lefty Carlos Rodon for Chicago. Then tomorrow night, it is Carlos Carrasco against Dylan Covey. And the series finale Thursday night, Josh Tomlin for the Tribe against James Shields. for the White Sox. With your Indians update, this is Jim Rosenhaus.
Meet Joe Tate.
I've been at Life Care twice. Both times, they helped me fight my way back home. It wasn't easy, but I came back.
Life Care Centers of America.
Visit Life Care Center of Westlake at 26520 Center Ridge Road.
This is Bullseye on Weather on AM 930. No time for chit, no time for chat. Let's break it down. Cloudy overnight, low near 63. Partly sunny Wednesday, high of 73.
I'm Jim Chesko with Your Money Now. Despite ongoing trade worries, investors are still feeling increasingly optimistic about the outlook for U.S. stocks. The latest monthly survey of fund managers by Bank of America Merrill Lynch confirms that investors believe Wall Street's bull market still has more gas in the tank. The optimism about stocks is largely related to the outlook for corporate profits. According to the survey, a net 69% of those polled said the U.S. is the most favorable region when it comes to earnings expectations, a record level in the 17-year history of the survey. An impressive rally on Wall Street today with consumer discretionary and technology shares.